have a dream that my four little children one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
U.S. forces, give the nod. It's a setback for your cause.
I'm talking about the real owners now, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. Politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the balls. They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table to figure out how badly they're getting fucked by a system that threw them overboard 30 fucking years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly shittier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your fucking retirement money. They want it back. So they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this fucking place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
Your dollar ain't shit, and it's taxed to no end. Those are rich men. Those are rich men.
Well, may we say, God save the Queen. Because nothing will save the Governor General.
God save the Queen! The fascist regime!
Boxing is nothing like going to war with machine guns, bazookas, hand grenades, bomber airplanes. My intention is to box to win a clean fight. But in war, the intention is to kill, 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 and continue killing innocent people.
Each time a man stands up for an ideal, or acts to improve the lot of others, or strikes out against injustice, he sends forth a tiny ripple of hope, and crossing each other from a million different centers of energy and daring, those ripples build a current which can sweep down the mightiest walls of oppression and resistance.
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side?
I shouldn't be up here. I should be back in school on the other side of the ocean. Yet you all come to us young people for hope. How dare you? You have stolen my dreams and my childhood with your empty words. And yet, I'm one of the lucky ones. People are suffering. People are dying. Entire ecosystems are collapsing. We are in the beginning of a mass extinction. And all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you?
There are many whites who are trying to solve the problem, but you never see them going under the label of liberals. That white person that you see calling himself a liberal is the most dangerous thing in the entire Western Hemisphere. He's the most deceitful. He's like a fox, and a fox is always more dangerous in the forest than the wolf. You can see the wolf coming. You know what he's up to. But the fox will fool you. He comes at you with his mouth shaped in such a way that even though you see his teeth, you think he's smiling and taking for a friend.
I can no longer remain in today's Democratic Party that's under the complete control of an elitist cabal of warmongers who are driven by cowardly wokeness.
And that's why psychos run the world. Because they don't give a fuck. They don't feel guilt. They don't give a shit. They'll fucking kill anybody. You know, and nice people, we should be killing them, but we don't because we can't deal with the guilt, right? And what do psychos do? They stay in power by killing loud, nice people. Martin Luther King, loud, nice. I know he banged a bunch of broads. Who gives a fuck? Guy was fucking up there crushing it. If nice people start killing psychos, okay, maybe then you wouldn't have a swirl of trash the size of Texas in the middle of the fucking Pacific Ocean. Do we work on that now? Because there's psychos in the world, and all they end up doing is trying to keep improving golf equipment so these man-titted fucking cunts can keep a ball on the fairway.
Yeah, socialists, sociopaths, communists, colonizers, capitalists, nihilists, and Nazis. Welcome to System Failure, a no-holds-barred exploration of the global fuckery that defines our time. I'm joined here once again by Dave Rastovich and Drew McPherson from Surf Rider. Drew, welcome, mate.
Thanks, mate. It's great to be here, Jed.
Mate, you're on a bit of a tour at the moment, taking a film around, a very important film about a very important issue. Can you tell us about it?
We are indeed, yeah. We're 12 stops in here in Byron Bay today, and we started down in Tasmania. The film is called Southern Blast, and it showcases a bit of a deep dive into the impacts of seismic blasting, which is the first step in offshore oil and gas exploration. We spend time in the communities that are going to be affected by this destructive industry, and we hear out their concerns from fishermen, marine scientists, to local surfers.
And what are you hearing? What are these fishermen, scientists, surfers telling you?
They're worried. You know, like fishermen are worried they're going to lose their jobs. This stuff affects fish catch rates, like lobsters and scallops. And these small communities have people that rely on that for their livelihoods and, yeah, their way of living. And, you know, surfers are concerned. First Nations people are concerned. Everyone's concerned. This project benefits the companies that are doing it and no one else. And it impacts everyone.
Hey Drew, the film's great, by the way, and I'm really excited when everyone gets to see it who you know can't come along to these stops. It'll be available soon, yeah, somehow.
Yep, for sure. Yep, we're going to do some film festivals next year, and it'll be available next year for other organisations and campaigns around the world. This is an international issue, so we really want to see that used as a tool around the world, so that other countries can use this as an education tool.
Wow, I did not know this was an international issue. So right now, Australia has the opportunity to set an example for the globe, and we're pretty good at that. That's exciting. That's a moment for the nation to step up and set an example.
It is, yeah, it's huge. When I first heard about seismic blasting over 4 years ago for the PEP 11 campaign that was off Newcastle and Sydney, the only tool we really had to educate people was a film called Sonic Sea, which does do a bit of a deep dive on seismic blasting, but mostly sonar and the sonar that's used in the US Navy and the impacts on pilot whales and whales there. And I remember when I first saw that film, I was like, oh my God, great. All I've got to do is take this to politicians and everyone, and then this campaign's over. And so little did I know and how naive I was that it's a much longer journey than that.
Mm. And when you talk about in the film, the fishermen being fired up about this, they have good reason to be fired up because this has actually happened before, yeah, and there have been results from seismic blasting that are really pretty tragic and certainly very threatening for fishing industries. Can you speak to that for us?
Absolutely. So some big research projects were done by IMAS, the Institute of Marine and Antarctic Science. They were notified from the fishing, the scallop and rock lobster industry, that they'd had huge impacts to their catch rates and to what they've been growing. And so they notified IMAS. IMAS then started doing research. So now the head of research for seismic in the world. So this is fresh research. And what that research points to is that it really has a big impact with scallops. It basically wipes out scallops so they're not commercially viable anymore. And we've heard fish stories of fishermen turning up with their fishing boats and seeing it just absolutely ripped to bits. They've never seen an ocean like it. And, you know, they've got people working on the boats, the young guys working on the boats, throwing up over the side of the boats that bad.
Wow.
And that's just scallops. And then you've got rock lobsters, which is a huge fishing industry. It brings millions of dollars to the Australian economy and especially the Tasmanian economy and Victoria. This affects Victoria as well. It basically... when the blasts go over, the rock lobsters lose their... it's kind of like their inner ear. We've got the little hairs that get seared off in their ear, and it means they can't balance, just like it'd be the same with us. So they lose their ability to right themselves, which is their main defense mechanism, right? If something's going to attack them, their soft belly is where they're going to get attacked, and they can't really get away from prey.
Mm. Fuck, mate. If there is an issue that's going to, you know, earn the ear of the bourgeois elites, it's the death en masse of rock lobsters, mate. They surely are going to be kicking up a stink over that, aren't they, Drew?
Oh, you'd think so.
No more lobster on the menu? You're kidding me?
So true.
Seriously, but, like, what an opportunity we have, you know, that these grubs are coming down under thinking they're going to fucking light up our oceans with crazy seismic blasting, and we get the chance to send them packing. That's magic, man.
It is, and it's huge corporations. It's one of those David and Goliath battles again. It's like some of the biggest companies in the world versus some of the smallest communities in the world.
And we're seeing that it's another Norwegian company, yeah, that's really spearheading this.
Yeah, there's TGS and Schlumberger, or I don't know.
Haven't they changed their name too? Like Equinor?
Yeah, they've just changed their name to SLB.
No way.
They've got a really bad reputation internationally. And so when they've come into Australia, they've changed their name. So
what's going on with these Nord lords? I thought they were all like mad commie socialist, you know, decent people, but they're fucking ripping off the environment like nobody's business. It's a disgrace.
Yeah, it just seems like they don't want to do it in their backyard. Yeah. But from what I'm hearing from speaking to Surfrider Europe and Surfrider US and hearing from other communities around the world, it's the same companies with the same threats every community. Like it's all the same companies that are here in Australia are the same ones that are affecting America, Europe, Africa, so many countries.
I think, sorry, Jay, but I wanted to tap into one thing you just mentioned there where you were getting a hold of Surfrider groups around the planet. And I think this is an interesting point to zoom in on for a tick, because Surfrider has existed for a long time in Australia and in America. It's gone through ups and downs of being really at the forefront of coastal custodian movements and things. And I think right now there's a lot of momentum building with people joining Surfrider and wanting to participate. Like, what are the positives you see as someone who's always given a shit? You grew up Catherine Hill Bay,
right
next to one of the world's biggest coal ports, if not the biggest. And, you know, this is an experience, a direct first-hand experience of disrespect for country and community that you've seen throughout your life.
Yeah.
Why have you chosen Surfrider to be a part of, and why should other people choose Surfrider to be a part of?
Yeah, really good question, Dave. Because it's tied to community, quite unique Surfrider that we have local branches. So most organisations just have a head organisation and they might work with communities, but they're not directly tied to them. By having branches, it means that whatever issue pops up locally, we've got to be on that. You know, we represent our branches. So I think because we're in community, and in my time in campaigning, I've learned that you get the best results from spending time in community and having real conversations. That's why I'm here, and that's why I'm working with Surfrider.
Yeah. There's a lot of history there to call on too. You know, like the things I think that people have faced in Southern California are like future glimpses for a lot of the rest of the world. I know as surfers, like you go there, and it's like jumping into the future and seeing hopefully what will not happen here in Australia, but could very well happen.
It's fucking hell, that joint.
It's crazy.
Kidding me.
It's crazy, you know, but there's a lot to learn from that. Like, you know, there's a lot we can go, hey, what did you all do? And or if we can't get a hold of them, at least we can look at the history books and see what's worked and what hasn't.
For sure. And we collaborate with Surfrider US and Europe on stuff that they're much bigger organisations and have a much bigger staff base than we do. And so we do work together and kind of educate and share the load for sure.
Yeah. And what's that load right now when we're looking at the seismic threat?
That load right now is 5.5 million hectares of seismic blasting in the Southern Ocean.
Yeah, every 10 seconds.
Every 10 seconds.
Over 400 days of it every 10 seconds, all day, all night, and we'll play it. We'll play this for people to listen to. So you get the magnitude.
It's like walking into someone's house and just their home while they're eating or something, and just blasting the loudest noises that you could possibly imagine. Like, we've got rules against that. You know, you can't have parties because they're too loud. There's certain decibels.
You can't have a band at the Eltham anymore without a couple of boomers fucking shutting the whole joint down.
Exactly.
It's unbelievable. What about the hypocrisy?
Exactly,
If boomers are, you know, invested in these, getting their dividends from the petrochemical companies, blast on.
That's it.
Fucking dogs.
That's it, man. And like, you know, these fish and these whales and their dolphins, they don't have a voice, or not a voice that we can really understand or interpret. Dave can probably speak dolphin.
Yeah,
I'm not surprised. I'm sure he's had some form of communication with them there.
Mate, well, let's take a listen to what this is going to sound like. So yeah, talk to us a bit about this kind of activist project. Annie's your queen, riding them. Bike from Tassie to Noosa to raise awareness about this. Tell us a bit about Annie's story.
Annie's incredible, yeah, super inspirational, and just such an incredible person to work with. She brings so much to this space. She did work in the industry. I met Annie a couple of years ago now after our Tasmanian branch notified us about this issue, and we came down to Tassie and we did a bunch of educational events. And we hired Annie to speak at those events and really relay the science that she'd seen and that science that was coming out of IMAS. Annie had just sort of taken a bit of a turn. She'd been actually working for the industry as what's called a marine mammal observer, which is basically a really tokenistic role. It's the main mitigation for harm to whales, basically. And her job was to stand on top of a boat and look for any whales. And if she found whales within a certain radius, they would have to shut it down. But as you'd imagine, it's pretty hard to see most whales. Whales and marine life are mostly underwater. And so they have one observer there day and night doing this, looking for whales. As you can imagine, at night, it's pretty difficult to spot whales coming to the surface. And then when you're in the Southern Ocean, you've got crazy wind and swell. We've read reports here. We go deep on this stuff. And there's reports where they say that the visibility for a marine mammal observer is poor 87% of the time.
Mm.
That's crazy. So for most of the time, they can't see what's going on.
Yeah, right.
And so she used to do that role, and now she saw how bad and how toxic and harmful that industry was, and now she's advocating against it.
So she's a whistleblower. She's your Edward Snowden, your kind of Chelsea Manning, but the environmentalist version of that, pushing back on unscrupulous corporations who are fudging numbers and just being all-round dogs.
That's exactly it. She's giving it to them now. She's sharing with everyone the stuff that she saw and the destruction of that industry. And, yeah, she's advocating hard. She's just ridden a push bike from Tasmania all the way up here, 4,000 Ks, because she really wants to push that issue hard, and she wants everyone in Australia to know how destructive seismic blasting is.
I think what's where we're at right now with this issue is a really interesting point, where we saw with the Fight for the Bight a real turning point with people giving a shit and wanting to somehow do something somewhere, and that came in the form of mass paddle outs, you know, tens of thousands of people doing that all over the country, and all kinds of people in our communities, not just uni students and hippies or whatever. But it was one of the things in that whole experience that there was like a turning point that I think really switched on all of us, and that was the mapping. Remember when the oil spill mapping came out, and it was like, oh, this is going to go over to Albany, around Tassie, all the way up the East Coast to like Port Macquarie basically, or more, even across to the west coast of New Zealand, and that's when everyone started melting down. So the interesting thing right now, I think, with the seismic blast threat is that it's an equally ominous and Mordor-like fucking Sith Lord proposal, right?
Well said.
But it's audio, and we live in a world where we think we're dominated by our visual sense, right? We're all watching TV more than we're listening to the transistor radio. We're in a visually dominated world, but our sense of sound really constructs our position in the world far more than we might realize.
Yeah.
So what I'm interested in is people out there, people who are listening to this right now, we need to employ our creative minds and all of our creative freaks that we know to come up with a way, there's many of those, thankfully, we need to come up with a way for the sonic violence of a seismic blast to be represented, illustrated, and communicated to each other in the same way that that oil spill mapping woke us all up to that threat. So I don't know how we do that. How do we do it, Jed?
We drive around on a ute with a speaker on the back of it, just do laps of wherever, just blasting cunts, giving them a taste. And then we park it out the front of fucking the Nordlord's office and just rev it right up, crank it to 11.
Sounds great.
Burst some vestibulars.
Yeah, man.
What is a vestibular?
What's a vestibular?
It's your inner ear, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, wow. Maybe.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, cool.
There you go.
Or it could be your nose hairs. No, that's your cilia. I'm carried away here.
Yeah, there's something I in like it, it. You know, but no. There is something in this because, you know, like the trick with this kind of thing is bringing it into all of our lives. Like, how do you bring something that's down in the deep, over the horizon, in the ocean, in the cold, wild Southern Ocean where very few of us frequent? How do we bring the concerns of the fishing industry, the fishing communities, the people of the South who will be directly impacted by this sort of bullshit technology? How do we communicate the level of that threat and that violence? And so I don't think we're there yet with what we can use to create that tipping point where everyone starts getting really fired up about this, because there is enough science now. Annie says this. She and you both know, Drew, that there is enough science to illustrate how negative, how violent, how destructive this technology is, but we just need a way to communicate it to each other. So maybe that's a call out to people, to listeners, that if you have that kind of skill, translating the audio. We need a bit of synesthesia here, like taking, you know, taking sound and making it visual.
Maybe that's the key. Just dose dudes up with macro doses of mushrooms. That's the last time I had synesthesia, but it's a fucking wild experience. You ever had that shit?
No, it's spring. It's there's rain, there's sun, it's warm. Their climate is right for that kind of thing, right, if you're into that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, tangent. What do you think?
I like the thinking there. I mean, look, we're watching right now. There's a spill in the Gulf of Mexico. There's 1.1 million gallons of oil that's leaked and counting, and they're still searching for the leak in the pipeline, last I heard. So, like, that's coming down under. That's coming our way. There'll be some fucking catastrophe like that. I mean, the Gulf of Mexico is fucking dead flat, isn't it? Like, we're talking about the Southern Ocean. It's 1,000 foot every day of the week.
Exactly.
So, you know, let's just fucking cut the head off before we even get there. And that's our opportunity right now, right?
Exactly, yeah. This is at the earliest stages. Seismic's the first step. And then they go into drilling. The drilling's not as impactful as seismic, but it's still bad. You're drilling into the seabed floor, you know. It's bad stuff as well, but the first step, seismic, is particularly really bad. And I think one thing that's really important to say is it really messes with plankton. And plankton,
mate,
and krill.
These are the building blocks of life. Exactly. Who knows, like, what happens lobster when you start fucking
baby,
with this stuff?
It's basically baby everything. And it blasts a hole in there kilometres long. And we didn't know that before this research was done. We thought it'd only do, like, you know, 20, 30, 40 metres. But we found out that it's blowing a hole in the biomass a couple of kilometres long. Like, that's huge. That's baby everything, and that affects the whole ecosystem.
Mm. So how can we join in here, Drew? How can we participate this, and how can we make that tipping point happen as quickly as possible so that it just gets knocked on the head?
Yeah, well, I think it starts with education, and from that education comes appreciation and an understanding of what's happening and what's at risk. And then I'm going to bring in a dirty word here, a word that a lot of people think is dirty, is politics. And I'm a big believer that community can have a big say in politics and really can shape politics. It might be a bit of an old school thought, but politicians were originally put there to represent their community's views and values, and it seems like that's kind of been lost. Mm. So,
what makes you say that? What in your first-hand direct experience makes you feel that way?
Yeah, because you've been down to Canberra. You've like had a proper crack in those varnished hallways.
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah, yeah. We spend a lot of time down there. We've got local branches, so we meet with their MPs over all sorts of issues. But for a big issue like this, we're meeting with federal politicians quite a lot. Face-to-face meetings go a long way. And we're really trying to push this and make it aware. And we've seen this work before. You know, we've done delegations for what I mentioned before with PEP 11. And as soon as we started going down there and showing face, you start seeing change. And so if I'm sitting in a politician's office and I know that there's 20,000 people have sent letters to them, you know, I know that that politician's aware of this issue and that there's going to be voters that are, you know, that want this stopped. Mm. And that holds a lot of power.
But there's this easy wedge that those politicians are always able to drive between us, and that is that, you know, oh, it's going to harm the economy, there's going to be all these jobs lost. And look, there's some truth in that. That's why it always works. You know, there's a lot of people, a lot of surfers, a lot of listeners of this program employed in the oil and gas industry, particularly, you know, in Southwest Oz, West Oz. Yeah. Like, it's that old saying that, you know, environmentalism without class action is just gardening.
Yeah.
And, like... that's the truth of it. Like, you know, until it seems to me, you may not agree, but it seems to me that until we can, well, I don't know what the solution is exactly to rid ourselves of that divisive ploy by liberal governments, right-wing governments, even Labor governments, that kind of drives a wedge in movements like this. But I mean, we're seeing with Annie, like, she was employed by that industry. She earned serious coin. You always do.
Yeah.
And I understand the plight of all those people working in oil and gas. Like, it's not an easy job. It's probably not a job they want to do, but they have mortgages, they have families.
Yeah.
And to suggest that we're rejecting these projects, you know, it's going to affect people's bottom line who can't afford that.
Yeah.
And that's real. But it's also worth reflecting on the fact that these corporations make fucking billions of dollars, pay no tax.
That's right.
You know, lobby governments, own politicians, own media channels. So, yeah, I guess it comes back to that united front. Like, it you know, in order to... The real problem, it seems to me, of the environmentalist movement is that, you know, it's kind of constantly playing whack-a-mole, like where you're constantly up against these projects and they're almost identical to each other, and they just the corporations know that there's finite resources in the working class public, and they just chew up those resources.
They do.
And they talk a lot about this word intersectionality, which is a fucking stupid word, but what it basically means is, like, whether you're against the war in the Middle East, whether you're against seismic blasting, whether you're against cost of living rises and stagnant wages, you're against the same fucking person. It's the same person, or the same, let's not say person, thing, capitalist creation behind all those things. And that capitalist creation is the resource sector, the petrochemical fossil fuels sector. So all those issues, it's almost not worth protesting one without the other. You know what I mean? Like, because at the end of the day, if we just protest them singularly, then we're just going to be playing whack-a-mole forever, and they're going to wear us down by chewing up our time and money and resources.
Yeah.
So how best to push back en masse? You know, how do we avoid having to keep fighting the same fight over and over again? Because at some point, that's what's going to have to happen. Otherwise, we're going to, you know, I'm fearful that we're going to lose. These people pull the strings on our economy. They fucking have their hands in our pockets. They're stealing our time. They're stealing our money. Mm. What's your solution, Drew?
Really good question. And I wish I had a really good answer for you. But like I said before, community strength, coming together, doing events, educating, doing paddle outs, like getting the community together and, you know, being at the beach and having a good scream and a yell in the protection of your coast, you know. We all use it. We all need it. We've just got to come together as a force and we've got to push back against this stuff and go to your politicians, hold them accountable, hit them with stuff, not physically.
Mm.
See, but, you know, contact them, and it's hard. I know some people are like, I don't want to call them, but they're a person, and the reason they've been able to get away with the stuff that they've been getting away with for a long time is because we're not holding them accountable. That's their job. We're paying their wages.
Yeah. I tend to think the solution to a lot of this has to be financial, and I guess that's where the class action comes in, where there needs to be a shakedown of these corporations, and that might mean, you know, the kind of general strike action that we saw in France in the late 60s that, you know, yeah, it cripples the economy. It's hard. You know, people, are, you know, and the cops beat you, and, like, you know, it's a gnarly situation. But at the end of the day, unless there's a financial solution to these problems that's going to alleviate the financial stress of people employed in these sectors, I can't see any other future but us playing fucking whack-a-mole.
Yeah, interesting. This proposal in particular, you're going to lose more jobs in the fishing industry that are long-term, that are going to be around here forever, that have sustained communities for a long time,
yep,
for a couple of years. Like, even if you're not an environmentalist and you haven't really thought about, like, we've got to phase out of this stuff. We're going to phase out of it. We've got to phase out of it pretty soon. Mm. Like, we all know that. There's not a lot of livelihood in these industries. So what, we're going to put a gas rig in the middle of the Southern Ocean and risk the Southern Ocean, which gives supplies and nutrients to the whole ocean and then gives jobs to people all around the coastlines there. And we're going to risk that for a couple of years' work so some guys can fly in and out and do some work for a few years, get themselves some houses and you know, whatever it is they spend their money on.
But, man, there's a lot of people who do depend on these kind of revenue streams, and it's not a couple guys that are just flying, like, FIFOing. Like, it's a legitimate... That's why these concerns raised by the Liberals work. So, like... We can't, like, trivialise those jobs being lost. Yeah. And I would say to people who do work in those sectors, like there's no shame, like, in... You don't have to agree with what your job is doing to the planet. Like, you can still turn out to these protests. You can leak fucking secrets. You can leak documents.
For sure.
Download Signal before you do any of that, though. Yeah. But, like...
For sure. We've seen, PEP 11, the offshore oil and gas off Newcastle and Sydney, like... There was 80,000 signatures out of that came out of Newcastle. I was in the community. I was having this conversation, and there was coal miners there.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
just because someone, you know, works in a coal mine at the back of Cessnock doesn't mean that they want a gas rig off their local beach.
Totally. And they got kids, man. They want a future for their children that's not going to be torched and bushfires and floods every 2 seconds.
It comes down to responsible development, man. It comes down to doing it right. Like, in the right place. And there, you know, we're going to need mining. We do need mining, you know, and we're going to need it for different resources in the future. You know, those resources are changing. But it's about how you do them and where you do them.
Mm.
And this straight up seismic blasting is bad stuff. Bad shit. It's got to stop. It really has to. And that's what these fishermen are saying. It's bad shit. It's got to stop.
Agreed.
I think that's a real key point in this. That fishing industry and those fishing communities, you know, are full of surfers. And full of coastal people who have had decades and generations of observation, and they all have that shifting baselines perspective. You know, like, you talk to anyone who actually got to sit down and listen to their grandparents speak about the level of catch and the size of species back decades ago, and then what's been caught now, and the desperation in the fishing industry, the depleting stocks everywhere.
Yeah.
And then the idea of literally coming in hot with this sort of technology and jeopardizing the thin threads that are just hanging on in the fishing communities.
Yeah.
I think that's who we could really rally behind. And I think that's what this film does really well.
Yeah.
I really urge people to check this out any way they can, because you're listening directly from the communities who are most concerned and most experienced. You know, you don't have experience of that country down there if you come from the Arctic Circle and some boardroom where you probably haven't swum in the Southern Ocean ever in your life. And then you have people who have lived in it their entire life and have authority in that way. And First Nations people that go into deep time understanding of those relationships. So I'm personally really psyched on this, man. I think you've all done a really good job with the film. I think it's a sign of the energy that's building around this, and I think it's a moment where, any small part people can play right now is a crucial part, you know, it's like a foundational time, really building the foundation of this effort.
Yeah.
And I think the opportunity to see individuals, individual communities really flare up in their own ways is really key in this.
For sure.
Because you see that the strategy of these corporations is to divide and conquer. You do community consultation, so-called community consultation, where you only see one person at a time in a room, a sealed room, and you divide up the community as much as you can. So what we need to do in balance to that is the exact opposite. We need to get together as much as we can. We need to communicate to each other as much as we can. We need to do exactly that, which is the opposite of that,
that strategy. Community, bring community together.
Yeah.
Yeah, that community consultation you talk about is a really interesting one. It's like, it's one of the most tokenistic things I've ever seen in my life. So basically the regulator or the government says that these corporations have to do community consultation. What that looks like, they kind of shape that. It'll be a tiny little, maybe like a 10-centimetre advertisement in the local paper, say that there's some acoustic surveying or acoustic modelling occurring off here. And so that's how communities
are known about that. The language.
Exactly right. And so we go to these community consultation events, and there's no locals in the room. They don't even know what's going on. You go to King Island and the whole town's buzzing around outside it. There's no signs out the front. Mm-hmm. It's not a sign saying, like, community consultation happening. Come on in.
Yeah, of course.
Nah. There's like five people that work for these gas companies just sitting there.
Wow. And this is why you all with Surfrider are really important in this. And even if you aren't someone that wants to participate in an environmental group, you have to acknowledge that this role that Surfrider is playing in undoing that kind of sneakery, that kind of bullshit tactic, is really important.
For sure.
I think that's a really important thing to acknowledge.
Yeah, and if you believe in stagnant wages and cost of living problems being wrong, then turn out for this protest because you're protesting against the same person.
Exactly right. Like, and these people in these communities aren't greenies. They're not activists. They're from the smallest, wildest communities in the world. It's from King Island. Like, it's wild there. They're a different breed and it's awesome. And, you know, like, They're there. They're fishermen, you know. They're people that have lived off this for a long time and they just want to be able to keep doing what they do so they can keep bringing money back for their family and what they're doing. Mm. You know, these are small communities and an island like King Island relies on its image. You know, they have dairy there. They've got all this pure image there. And that allows them to, you know, work in international and national markets and sell their produce. You go and put a gas rig off the west coast or six gas wells off the west coast of it where you've got prevailing west winds and west swell. Like, it's not going to be real good for the image of King Island, is it?
Mm-hmm.
And so these small communities get affected by these huge corporations.
Just bringing home money for the family, that's the situation that everyone in this country is in. And, you know, that scarcity complex, it's a total simulation. We won. Technology created automation and obscene abundance, and it's being withheld by petrochemical oligarchs, and it's time to get that money back. And what you say about the grassroots activism is so true, mate. It always starts at the bottom and goes up. It doesn't fucking start at the top and go down. I'll give you the hot tip. Like, so now is the opportunity, like you said, to connect on that grassroots level. I mean, who's going to be the next Midnight Oil? Which fucking Aussie pub rock band's going to step up and have a crack? And I mean, I'm sure you guys would love nothing more than to get in contact with some of the top bands who want to get on stage and make a bit of racket themselves.
That's it. We can stop this and we can have a good time doing it.
Exactly, man. And ultimately, right now we've got a mad commie as the prime minister, a dude who was in favour of rent strikes, who was in favour of, Palestinian rights back in the day, who's from Camperdown, a single mum. Like, I grew up in that suburb, with a single mum. I kind of know what this guy thinks. So those politicians, they love protests of this nature because it allows them to go to the petrochemical companies and go, look, there's hundreds of thousands of people out there. Like, what do you want me to do? I got to act on what these hundreds of thousands of people want from you guys. And so, look, protests are like our way of communicating with power and putting the politician between a rock and a hard place, where he then has to go to his overlords and say, I've got no choice, boys. Sorry, I've got to tax you 40%.
That's right. Yeah, it's pushing back against that. It's pushing back against that industry. Like, those guys are in there lobbying all the time. Like, we spend time in Parliament, but not enough. Like, whenever we go there, we just hear that there's fossil fuel lobbyists that are in there the whole time. You know, they're deeply invested in Australian politics. And I see it. I'm there. I see it when it's voted on stuff. It's a divide in politics. And it's really obvious. Like, right now, we've got the Labor government that promised that when they got into power, that PEP 11, quote unquote, would be sent back to the dustbin. And that's what Anthony Albanese said to us. And he looked us in the eyes and he said it pre-election. And now, you know, we're a year into that. We haven't heard boo. Community still hanging over communities' heads. The biggest, you know, an oil and gas project off the most popular coastline in Australia, and it's been hanging over their heads for a year, and they're really worried to do anything because they're worried they're going to get sued by a gas company.
Yeah.
So they've got politicians that aren't doing their job because they're worried about getting sued. Like, how does that work? That's not fair. And you know,
so PEP 11 needs another flare up too, then, publicly. Yeah,
for sure,
to make that rock absolutely and hard place more precarious.
Yeah.
Mate, and it's crazy to see, just a little case study of what happens when a politician does stand up to the petrochemical companies. We saw that with Kevin Rudd. You know, he wanted that 40% mining tax, which is a mad shakedown on your crud. That was a sick idea. But the day it was announced, or shortly after, those petrochemical or resource companies put a pause on all their projects and crippled our economy in fucking like one day. All these stocks just went off a cliff, and he got axed instantly. And that's what happens. That's why someone like Albanese is all of a sudden, as soon as he gets elected, going quiet on PEP 11. That's why all of a sudden he's pro-Israel and exporting arms there. Like, as soon as they get into office, they realise that, like, their political future, if they want to get anything done, they have to toe the line. Otherwise, they just get sacked immediately. You know, we don't live in a democracy. It's horseshit, man. Mm. It's like, you can't see all the fucking puppet strings behind these guys, but they're there. You've seen it.
Yeah, for sure. I've seen it. But one thing I'm always reminded of when I go there, and, you know, each time you walk in, you're like, I'm small fry here. You know, like federal politicians, big building, squeaky floors. You know, you got your suit on, you're all dressed up. And every time I walk out there, I'm like, they know what's going on. Community has power. We can do stuff. We can make change. We really can. That's the biggest reminder every time I go there.
I love that message, bro. And if you listen to the start of this episode, the Robert Kennedy quote, the speech before he got a fucking bullet put in his head by the CIA, was exactly that message. Like, one person creating a ripple of positive energy by standing up against the injustice, you know, crosses with the ripples of energy sent by people all over the globe. And that creates this... you know, massive energy, and that is really what it's about. It's about every person understanding that those little ripples, that like a butterfly flapping on the other side of the world, creating a cyclone, or whatever it is that saying, like, that shit's true, man.
Yeah.
And we need to be conscious of that and not be afraid to you know, you don't have to yell and scream. You can just show up. It must be done. It's beyond a joke now. Like, it's a fucking G up, and I think every working person understands that. So how long are we going to put up with this shit for?
Not long. Let's step up. Like, let's do it. We've got control over our future here. You know, let's all step up. We've all got a role to play, for sure. And I want to make it clear, like, we're completely non-bipartisan. You know, we don't support any political parties. Like, and the way that our funding, we're a charity, we're set up that way, and we stand behind that. You know, like, we don't support any politicians at all. We're here to hold them accountable. When we're not on their team, we're here to hold them accountable for communities, and I think that's really strong. And I think that's something that I really stand behind with this organisation, is that it's non-bipartisan. You know, we're not puppets for political parties. We're not. We're here to hold them accountable.
And in terms of big grassroots, like, projects, or, you know, just getting feet on the street and getting out into the public, like, obviously this is a good start, but, you know, how do we get to that stage when we're turning back the clock to the midnight oil era of these huge kind of punk rock shows that are also protests at the same time. Can we do that?
Yeah, Drew? Absolutely, we can do that. Get along to a screening and see Southern Blast. Join your local branch, a Surf Rider branch. We've got 18 local branches around Australia, and we work with them. You got issues, we'll work on them and fight with you for those issues. And you know, like if it gets to early next year and we don't have results on this, there's going to be paddle outs and there's going to be events, and we're going to kick this shit down.
Mad.
Mm. Great.
All right. Thanks, Drew. Fucking legend, mate. Love your work. And yeah, really excited about kicking these pricks in the coit. It's going to be great.
Thanks, fellas. Absolute pleasure to be here.
Thanks for having us, Drew.